Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn and John Russell. Brian brings us a story about money for some schools in the northeastern U.S. state of Maine that has been left unclaimed. Find out why laws put in place to stop discrimination are preventing the schools from using the money. John's story tells about oysters, the small sea creatures that many people enjoy eating. But this story is not about food. It is about how the oysters might be able to protect coastal areas from storms. Later, you will hear this week's Higher Education Report. Monday is the workers' holiday called Labor Day in the U.S. I looked at why college campuses are an important part of the conversation about labor unions. At the end of today's program, Anna Mateo joins us for her weekly Words and Their Stories. You will learn about a common phrase in American English relating to a method of transportation, trains. We hope you keep listening. And now, here's Brian Lynn.
Religious schools in the northeastern state of Maine have been slow to accept state money for students because of policies linked to the assistance. The schools are able to receive the assistance because of a U.S. Supreme Court decision handed down in June. The court ruled that Maine must include religious schools in a program that offers financial help to students in rural areas with no public schools. Parents of students at religious schools brought the legal case against the state. They wanted the tuition assistance provided to other parents. The case reached the U.S. Supreme Court. But so far, only one religious high school in Maine has signed up for the assistance program this fall. Maine's Attorney General has warned the schools that when accepting the financial assistance, they will have to obey current anti-discrimination laws. These include laws involving students and teachers who belong to the LGBTQ community. This development has troubled some families involved in the case. David Carson had a daughter attending Bangor Christian School when his family and others brought legal action in 2018. He told the Associated Press he now feels like his hands have been tied, meaning he feels what he can do is now limited. "The state said you can take the money, but we'll tie your hands," Carson said. Religious high schools with a known interest in the tuition fight include two Roman Catholic-supported schools, along with schools in the towns of Bangor, Waterville, and Holton. Last year, 29 private schools took part in the tuition assistance program, officials said. That effort involved more than 4,500 students. schools that meet the state's requirements can get about $12,000 per student in taxpayer assistance. Marcus Moraca is a state education spokesperson. He confirmed that only one religious school had registered for the program so far. Moraca said officials would need to examine the school's request before the assistance can be issued. Michael Bindus is a lawyer with the Virginia-based Institute for Justice, a nonprofit law firm that represented the families in Maine. He told the AP he is not surprised that the schools have been slow to decide whether to take part in the program. He said this is because of the questions raised by the Attorney General. Those open questions, however, will be resolved in time, and we certainly expect religious schools to participate, Bindus said. Carol Connolly is the director of the Christian Civic League of Maine and a former Christian school official. He said it is more likely that the effects will be felt more during the 2023-24 school year. People want to see it happening, but schools are being cautious. It's a big change, Connolly said. Maine's Attorney General, Aaron Fry, has criticized the Supreme Court ruling. He said all schools accepting public financing, including religious schools, must obey the state's Human Rights Act. The act bans discrimination on the basis of race, sex, sexual orientation, ethnicity, or disability. That means the schools must accept gay and transgender teachers and pupils, Fry said. Both Christian schools linked to the legal action, Temple Academy in Waterville and Bangor Christian School, have policies that discriminate against students and employees on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity, Fry added. Tom Brown is president of Bangor Christian School and leads a religious center linked to the school. He said in an emailed statement to the AP that his organization was currently processing the Attorney General's statements. He confirmed that no students would be getting state tuition assistance this fall. I'm Brian Lynn.
Government agencies and volunteer groups in many places are using sea creatures to protect coastal areas from storms and rising sea levels. The idea is that large groups of oysters, known as colonies, can help reduce the power of waves. Powerful waves can damage lands along the edge of ocean waters. Denise Vaccaro's home was destroyed 10 years ago in Superstorm Sandy, a big storm that affected the U.S. northeast coast. The beach she loved is also gone, claimed by rising seas that are damaging the shoreline. "It's so sad that this little community has lost its beach," Vaccaro said. "People are losing their property. My home was totally destroyed. It's a way of life that's being lost." Many people around the world have had similar experiences. Once beautiful beach communities are washing away, and the people living there are having problems dealing with the changes. oysters may play an important part in dealing with the problem. Oysters are central to a project that is taking place near Vaccaro's rebuilt house. The project is being carried out by the American Littoral Society. It received $1 million from the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. The group has been building steel wire containers, filling them with rocks and whelk shells, and positioning them along the shoreline of Barnegat Bay. Tiny baby oysters, called spat, are attached to whelk shells and placed in the bay near the existing cages to further stabilize the shoreline. The shoreline in Vaccaro's neighborhood has lost 46 meters of beach since 1995, the Littoral Society says. The oysters appear to be doing their job. One recent day, a strong east wind blew across the bay. But between the oysters and the shoreline, the water was much calmer, and waves gently went onto the shoreline instead of hitting it with force. As an added benefit, the oysters help improve water quality in the bay. The Associated Press reports that a single oyster can filter up to 190 liters of water a day. A few kilometers south, a group called Reclaim the Bay is building an oyster reef to protect the shoreline of Mordecai Island. People do not live on the island, but it protects the shoreline of Beach Haven, a town on Long Island Beach. Volunteers fill bags with 16 kilograms of whelk shells, to which millions of baby oysters have been attached. Then volunteers move them out to the reef a few hundred yards into the ocean. They have placed 10,000 bags of oysters and whelk shells there since 2015. In the last 100 years, Mordecai Island has lost 35% of its size, said Jack Duggan, a longtime volunteer with the group. If we do nothing, in 40 years the island will be gone, just washed over. This island protects Beach Haven from taking the force of all that wave action. Governments and volunteers in other places are taking similar steps. In New York, city, state, and federal agencies are building living shorelines along the southwestern end of Long Island. They use oysters, shells, and native plants. A similar project in Delaware used 1,300 bags of shells to extend shoreline protection near Lewis Canalfront Park. The Oyster Recovery Partnership in Maryland has placed billions of oysters on shells in Chesapeake Bay in a project set to run through 2025. In Florida, volunteers and researchers established oyster colonies along parts of the Peace River in Punta Gorda. In Argyll, Scotland, a group called Sea Wilding began restoring, in 2020, a place near a coastal area that had been damaged. They restored more than 300,000 oysters there. Also in Scotland, a project aims to restore 30,000 oysters near Edinburgh. Vaccaro said her New Jersey home may well depend on the success of many small oysters. If we don't do anything, we're not going to have any of these houses, Vaccaro said. She added, I saw what happened, and I see what can happen again. I'm John Russell.
I'm Dan Friedel. and you're listening to the Learning English broadcast. Up next, my story about how the conversation about labor unions in the U.S. is centered on college campuses. That will be followed by Anna Mateo and this week's episode of Words and Their Stories. If you enjoy learning about transportation words, you will want to keep listening. But first, this message about a new program from Learning English. My colleague Ashley Thompson is here with some more information.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Thank you, Ashley. And now the Higher Education Report. Those arriving at colleges this year might see office workers, researchers, or graduate assistants on strike. A strike is when workers decide not to do their job as a way to ask for more money or better working conditions. That is what happened in late August at American University, AU, in Washington, D.C. Linda Golden works in the Career Center at AU. She was one of about 500 staff members who stopped working to ask for a better contract. Golden said she and other workers wanted to be sure they could cover the cost of living in Washington, D.C. They also felt that workers were being asked to do more work because the school was slow to replace people who left for new jobs. At a large meeting for first-year students on August 26th, many walked out when the university president began speaking. They gathered outside to support the striking workers, saying, "Pay your staff." Within 2 days, the university announced that it had reached a temporary agreement to pay the striking workers more. Golden called the agreement a step in the right direction, and she had a message for international students who might be in the U.S. for the first time.
I think it's important for students coming to the U.S. to know that we have, as workers, the right to organize, to make a case for ourselves, and to fight for better working conditions. Everyone deserves to make fair wages and earn a living. And when that's not the case, we also have a right, a legal right, to organize, to demand improved conditions.
The rights that Golden describes have been in place since 1935 in the U.S. That was the time Congress passed the National Labor Relations Act to provide workers with the right to organize, seek representation, and fight for better working conditions. The law protects American workers who act together to address work conditions, with or without representation from labor unions. When people think of labor unions, they usually think of people who are working in factories or coal mines. In recent years, workers at companies like Starbucks and Amazon are forming their own unions. And some of the most important conversations about workers' rights are going on at American colleges among graduate students and those who play sports such as American football and basketball. Thank you. In the past, graduate students who also held jobs as teaching or research assistants received a small payment and reduced tuition for helping to teach or do research. Now, graduate and research assistants can ask for help from their unions if they feel like they're being treated unfairly. There are unions representing them at Columbia, Harvard, and New York University. In California, students at 10 schools in the University of California system became unionized in late 2021. The graduate assistants' success in forming unions has led college students who play sports to think about how they can organize to get more from the schools. The Big Ten Conference is made up of major schools like Ohio State University, Pennsylvania State University, and the University of Michigan. Recently, the organization signed a contract with several television broadcasters that will bring in $7 billion over the next 7 years. The broadcasts will show games played by student athletes who receive not much more than a small payment and tuition. Dan Murphy writes about college football for ESPN. For years, Murphy said, there has been talk of a union in college football, but the last serious attempt failed in 2014. Now that some student athletes are making hundreds of thousands of dollars on what is known as name, image, and likeness agreements, they have more power than in the past. Murphy noted that some also have agents who help them with making deals.
If college athletes could ever organize their voices and kind of act in unison, they would have so much leverage that the NCAA would have to sort of cave and really change their business model.
Murphy also noted that the unions might be able to help college athletes have more time away from their team or more time to rest after games.
The NCAA has rules that you're supposed to only spend about 20 hours a week or so on your sport when you're in season, but no one really follows those.
Many workers in the U.S., however, will get the day off on Monday in honor of Labor Day, a holiday that started in 1882. I'm Dan Friedel.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. We give examples and notes on usage. And sometimes we tell you how the expression came into use. Today we talk about train tracks. Imagine a town that has a railroad and train tracks running through it. Trains may be great to travel on, but crossing their tracks can be dangerous. Bright lights and warning signals at tracks can only do so much. Train tracks often will divide a town in two. One side is often more desirable than the other. The houses are usually bigger or newer. Public resources, like schools and parks, are more available or are better operated. There might be better stores, restaurants, and fewer crimes reported on the desirable side of town. The other side of the tracks and town might be poorer. The houses are smaller or less modern. It also might be where factories, trash dumps, and other industrial sites are found. Community centers, playgrounds, and similar places may be few and far between,
This means there aren't many of those facilities. That kind of town, separated by a good side and a bad side, is at the heart of the expression, the wrong side of the tracks. Tracks refer to the railroad tracks. These sometimes were thought of as splitting a town between the haves and have-nots. If I am from the wrong side of the tracks, I am from the poor part of town. However, you don't have to live in a town with railroad tracks to use this expression. And many towns with railroad tracks do not divide rich and poor people. If I grew up in an underdeveloped, poor, and possibly dangerous environment without railroad tracks, I could still say I grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. We use this expression another way. Sometimes we don't even know where a person is from, but if they often cause trouble or get into trouble, someone might say they are bad news and are from the wrong side of the tracks. Now, crossing the tracks, either for love or to create a richer life, is a popular idea in stories. Many popular movies are about star-crossed lovers who are from different sides of the tracks. Their different economic conditions and cultural backgrounds form a barrier. Their families and friends try to keep them apart. But in the end, they overcome these obstacles, fall in love, and live happily ever after. At least in the movies. Dirty Dancing is one of these popular movies. She is an upper middle class girl. He is a working class dance teacher. They meet at a summer camp, and their shared joy of dance brings them together. The barriers break down. Lady and the Tramp, Pretty Woman, and Grease are other very popular movies centered on this idea. Now, sometimes the story concerns one character trying to move from the wrong side of the tracks to the right side. We can call this a rags-to-riches story. Rags here are old, poor clothing in disrepair. Annie is a rags-to-riches story. She is a poor and parentless girl who gets adopted by a rich man. Sometimes the story is about two groups of people from either side of the tracks who can't seem to get over their differences and get along. The film The Outsiders is a good example. The Greasers are from the wrong side of the tracks. The Socials are from the right side of the tracks. In the story, however, both sides get into trouble. The Socials, or Socias, just have more money and better cars. And that's all the time we have for this Words in Their Stories. Don't forget to practice using the expression, to be from the wrong or right side of the tracks. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
Thank you, Anna. And that's the Learning English broadcast for today. Thanks to my colleagues, John Russell, Brian Lynn, and Anna Mateo. And thank you for listening. Be sure to join us again tomorrow to keep learning English with stories from around the world. Visit the Learning English website for more. You can find us at learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Dan Friedell.